tell me that you went home and swiped a ball that was signed by Babe Ruth, and you brought it out here and actually played with it?
Yeah.
Are you one of those people that has to know how much the Babe Ruth ball is actually worth?
I was going to bring it back,
but it was signed by Babe Ruth.
Yeah, you keep telling me that. Who is she?
We'll keep it right here because today is your lucky day.
The Sultan of Flood.
King of Crash.
The Colossus of Cloud. The Colossus of Cloud.
Babe Ruth!
It's time for Sports Collecting with Tom Morgan, sponsored by ERC Delivery and Huggins and Scott Auctions.
Happy Saturday morning. I'm Tom Morgan with Vince Clemente of ERC Delivery, Bill Huggins of Huggins and Scott Auctions, and our producer, Tyler Aki. We're on until 8 o'clock. We have two shows left this week and next week for 2021. So if you want to get a question in, today's the day to call, 312-332-3776. We'll be joined at 7:20 by truly the unbeatable Nancy Huggins. I think she's kind of clinched
it. The officially unbeatable Nancy.
I was just looking at the totals for the. I added a point to everybody because all three men were at six. I didn't want to have 666 for the men going into this week. So all the men have seven, and Nancy Huggins has 10. With 2 weeks left, unless she goes out on a limb and maybe tries to do the same one, I think you guys are playing for second. But I already have the box. Pop Century won't be in time. I actually had to cancel Pop because I don't even know when it's coming. But really? I have another one of these to do a split.
Oh, that's nice.
So we're playing for second place, it looks like, which could be a really good card out of here.
Sure.
So
absolutely.
There's still a good prize at the end of the rainbow. For. But Nancy Huggins has prize number one. I've been clearing out the store, you know, I've been doing it for a long time, actually, but now it's finally getting there. Because I only have a couple weeks left that I'm going to be open at the store. Well, Wednesday, I had a few things in my hands, and I'm walking out through the parking lot towards my car. And there's a guy on a bicycle riding north on the sidewalk by Mill Street. And as I'm walking up to the car, I see him kind of ride. Just before he disappears in front of my car, he looks over, and I hear him go, "Hey." And then his bike went, and I'm walking towards my car. He backs up, and he goes, "Hey, are you going to be closing?" And I said, "Yeah, in a couple of weeks, but I'll still have an online business, and you know, so keep an eye on my website, tcrowntom.com. I'll still have tcrowntom@gmail.com to be in touch with people, still have the Twitter ID." He goes, "Well, that's good." He goes, "You're going to still do the show next year?" I go, "Well, we think we probably will. That's something we're definitely looking at." He goes, "Well, that's great," because he says he loves the show, works nights in Chicago, and listens on his way home
from
work every day. So I guess he ends at 7 and then comes back and listens. And he just wanted to tell everybody who does the show with us how much he likes it.
That's cool.
So how can
that's
we
really
get
cool.
with that
awesome.
Type of thing? How can we not at least try to get it back on? To me, it might be easier to do a show not having a store too, because I'll be able to relax after the show instead of having a day of
absolutely.
Tea crown. So we'll see what happens, but it's very possible it'll come back next year, sometime maybe in the spring or so. We've got already crazy ideas of how we're going to do it if we do it. So
Tom, with all the stuff you've been getting, gosh, we're doing well with the Chicago area gathering stuff for the show. So,
yeah, people have definitely, there's been a ton of calls, and pretty much when people say, you know, "Do you want to help me with this stuff, maybe send it to auction?" I mean, then when they come in, they're always talking about, "Boy, I love the show," or "You know, what we talked about," or all that stuff. So yeah, we're going to try to keep it going if we can. Now here's something, Bill Huggins. Some of the things in for the November auction I was looking at, the old left hand butterfly variation. Okay. You know what I'm talking about? The Joe Namath 1965 Topps rookie card number 122 PSA 6. It has a left hand butterfly variation. When you look at it, you can see it's like a smudge on his left hand. I had never heard of that before, but is that something you guys get very often? Not something I've seen.
I don't know what the population is, meaning butterfly to non-butterfly ratio or anything, but
yeah.
It's got to be 10, 50, 100 to 1 or something like that or more that you see that. And I think, I'm doing a show in Chantilly this weekend, and I brought both of those two cards with me to put on display, and they're kind of right next to each other in the showcase. And a couple of the other dealers at the show were coming by and going, they think that's just a print dot or a print variant, sort of a, as opposed to any planned type thing or anything.
Yeah, but, it looks like a smudge that got on one of the printing, while they were doing the printing process.
Does it resemble a butterfly?
Other times when print dots or variations or something will come out on a card and everything, it's a negative. This is the only thing that's ever been really turned into sort of a positive as far as a print dot or something like that. So
yeah, it has a 1200 minimum bid, so it'll be very interesting to see what happens with that one. That's something I had never heard of before, but I don't know if anybody's ever even brought a Namath rookie card in here. I don't remember ever having one or ever sending one to auction or anything. I don't remember. They must not have made millions of those to begin with.
Right.
Well, the other thing about that, those cards is not a lot of people save those cards, and the collections, a lot of them, honestly, that we've gotten in over the years, they're bent, a lot of them, because they were taller, and they're bent right at the size of a regular card, And I just don't, they don't fit really in a 9-pocket sheet and everything. So it's sort of a tougher set to collect or something that people, didn't really catch on to, against the old degrees, and they probably did it 1 year,
When you look at Joe Namath's stats, they don't stack up to the new quarterbacks. I think he might have had more interceptions than touchdown passes, but the game has changed in so many ways. He had a great arm, but his big thing was that Super Bowl III where he predicted the win, and he got all that publicity, and they were supposed to get killed, and they actually won. I mean, he made a lot of players a lot of money, and they all knew it. And I think the players he played with looked up to him even.
For sure.
I mean, that really – the whole it went into one league instead of two leagues. I mean, really, a lot of it pointed towards him. So he was really important in the history of the NFL, no matter what, however his stats will end up. He did have a great arm, but he had so many knee problems.
Absolutely.
And think about that now, even those knee problems, they would have fixed them and probably would have been fine, but... Yeah, pretty interesting.
After the Super Bowl, like the next year, he was on TV shows and commercials and talk shows. And, so he's in everybody's home all of a sudden after predicting the victory. So
he made more money on pantyhose than some women do.
That's probably true, actually. That thing was on all the time. So let's see now. What else do we have here? I got a big 1953 feel to the show today, and all the Which Ended Hires are 1953 items, because that one I sent in those couple of cards, a 53 Topps Mantle, which got a 3.5, and I just saw this week that the Willie Mays we sent in got a 3. So those were good grades for those cards. I picked up a couple of 56 Tops because I'm collecting the Hall of Famers, and I just found out I sent them to SGC figuring they were in that range, and I'm getting 3 on those. I'm like happy with that.
On the real
old stuff, if they're out of your budget, some of the high really high prices on the high grades. It's kind of neat to have the card in any grade. And these will still go for some good bucks, but you know, it's not six figures or anything when they're in a three. But I got a Koufax, what was it? A Koufax and an Aaron that I had picked up, and that they're coming back. I just saw the email yesterday. They both got threes. I'm very happy with that.
That's great.
I picked up
That's
a Mantle tube from that. It's kind of neat from my birth year to have. I'm trying to get all the Hall of Famers in at least some grade, either SGC or PSA. So that's kind of fun, actually.
Very cool.
To try to collect. Here's some things that sold in the August auction. Vin, see that Ernie Banks photo?
Yes.
Well, I picked up that card. I'll have to show you a picture of it. I took a picture of it. It has that photo. It's the 1971 Topps Greatest Moments. I picked up a grade at Ernie Banks. I have every Topps Ernie Banks card, the regular edition ones, except his rookie grade.
Oh, okay.
I'll pick up a rookie at some point, I think.
How many of the cards did you actually write on? Just that one that you...
The only one with that I wrote Good Man on is the one that's still on the wall of fame. Yes.
Cool.
So anyway, they sold a 1971 Topps Greatest Moments baseball 55-card set with seven graded, none higher than a seven. I think the Banks I got was a six. $8,600.
That's real strong.
Those cards have picked up pretty well. I actually had seen people asking $500-$600 on a six, and I saw somebody with it for $195, and I was like, I had to get that. Because I had sold one, and I wished I hadn't. And it's just neat that there's that picture, too.
Yeah. I think that's about the year I started collecting baseball cards. And that's
71?
Any spare money, I went and got baseball cards. And so I had all those. I'd put them in piles, watch the Cubs game. And, but
what were they at the time? Were they like 10 cents a pack, 20 cents a pack? Do you remember?
You know, I don't. Yeah. I really don't. But any chance I had, you know.
Yeah, I bet you didn't hold packs either, even then.
No. Quickly, they were opened up. You
that
know,
was inbred in him when he was born.
you got that right, my friend.
Yes, without
you know, I'll tell you, Tom, we had a group, I don't know what year it was, years ago, in the auction of 10. I don't know if you remember, they had the 30-card packs topped in like 71. They were in like a little cardboard box. You could see through the card and everything.
I didn't see those.
Yeah, and we had 10 of them as a lot in one auction.
Ooh.
And the guy who won them was Hal Steinbrenner.
And, really?
Oh.
Yeah, and he called me up after that, and we talked, and he said, could we get these to him? Because he's going out on his yacht and he wants to open them on the yacht.
Oh, that's so cool. That is a great story. I love that.
Well, Vince, when you get your yacht, you can open some packs
yacht,
on
right.
there.
I'll have a little tugboat, actually.
Yeah.
A la Mark Twain down the Mississippi, you know?
Yeah. Well,
that's
here's another thing that sold a Babe Ruth 1933 Gowdy number 181. That we had sent in through here with a few different, that was a 2.5, sold for $8,400. There's a PSA 4 example of that card in the November auction with a $2,500 minimum bid.
Wow.
So this one was a 2.5 that went for $8,400. So we'll see what this guy's 4 does. That's not my guy. It's a different guy.
Yeah.
But that should do really well.
Yeah,
hey, did you see the tweet that I tweeted to you? When was it? The Bulls' first game, Stacey King, somebody got hit in the eye or whatever, and Stacey goes, "Cut me, Mick."
Did he really?
I tweeted to your attention. I was like, Vince, did you hear it? So,
I'm going to have to find that. Yeah.
There's that one story there. We used to do that Cut Me, Mick all the time when we were doing splits here and open a box. And you started it with doing the Cut Me, Mick.
Cut me.
Well,
I can't see.
One time I'm walking to the bank. I think I told this story on the show before, but I'm walking to make a deposit at my bank, and there's big glass windows there. And then right inside the windows, there's little cubicles. where they're about probably 4 feet high that people meet with the bankers in. So this guy must have seen me walking in. One of our guys that would come once in a while on Saturdays, I don't know if you know who he was, but I walk in, I walk in the bank. All of a sudden, he pops up from a cubicle and goes, cut me, Mick, and sits back down. That was the funniest thing that ever happened at a bank to me, tell you that. And like the tellers, then I walk up to the tellers, and they're looking at me like, cut me, Mick, what's that all about?
That's awesome. That's
never mind.
Awesome.
Just, got my deposit.
Inside joke.
Yeah, right.
That's funny. That's funny.
Anyway, that seeing that Willie Mays, over the years, I've thought Mike Trout and Willie Mays were a lot alike. Well, I did a thing, and I found out actually on Baseball Reference, I did it by accident. I wanted to compare Mike Trout and Willie Mays stats through the age 29 year. And if you click on the one thing, I think on the original one, and then on the wherever you want to add it up to on a guy, if you don't want his whole average, it puts it up. It automatically adds up though that group of years. So I was able to compare, listen to how they've done. 1,288 games for Trout, 1,231 for Mays, 890 runs for Mays, 967 for Trout, 1,491 hits for Mays, 1,419 for Trout, 310 homers for Trout, 279 for Mays, 818 to 816 RBIs. It's really 204 wow. stolen bases to 203. I mean, it's incredible.
Wow, that's close.
Now, total bases, the OPS plus, Trout's higher, but they're 162 game averages, really close. But here's something Trout's got to go up against, and I didn't even realize this. Over from when he was 30 through 34, the next 5 years, Mays averaged 45.2 homers from 30 wow. to 34. He hit 40 and 61, 49 and 62, 38, 47, and in 1965, at age 34, he hit 52 homers. Wow. So Trout's he's got to get healthy now to keep. It was like, well, it looks like Trout's numbers, his power numbers are actually better up through this time they are. But then he's got
to. Willie Mays.
That's a
crazy.
Pretty good bar to go over there after that. For sure. So for the 5 years, that was pretty incredible. And then Mays started to tail off after that and really played probably a year or two too long. But what a great career he ended up with.
Yep.
And Trout and him are really close, though.
Trout just needs to avoid injuries, and he needs to have 100, 150 game seasons where he's playing 3-4 years in a row, 150 games or more, and then he'll get close to those
numbers.
But
it did, it made their game totals through 29, because Mays had missed some time early in his career for the Korean War. I think it was a year, year and a half he was out. After he had already started playing some when he was younger. So, it'll be interesting. I hope Trout doesn't turn into like a Griffey who, once he hit 30, was all injury prone and his numbers really dropped off. Hopefully he can be like Mays and pick it up from that point on.
Yep.
From a collecting standpoint, a lot of people have. And Trout, even with missing all those games this year, cards seem like they've held in pretty solidly.
Did Mays always play the outfield his whole career, or did they move him to like a first base at all?
He may have played first a touch, but even in the last year, one of the things with him, he was in the playoffs playing center field. The sun was bad, and he lost a couple flies when he was old in the sun and was staggering around under him. So that was kind of like everybody's like, oh, it's too bad he stayed that long. But it was part of it was the sun, part of it he was old. But yeah, he was a great outfielder. He was next to Bobby Bonds for a while. When Bobby Bonds came up, he played right and Mays played center. So it's time for a short break now. After the break, we'll be joined by the unbeatable and undefeatable, she's got it clinched, Nancy Huggins, and John Bulldog Drummond for this week's episode of which ended higher in another trip in John Bulldog Drummond's time machine. So hang in there. We'll be right back.
Now back to Sports Collecting with Tom Morgan. Sponsored by ERCDelivery.com and Huggins and Scott Auctions on ESPN 1000 and ESPNChicago.com.
Welcome back. I'm Tom Morgan with Vince Clementi of ERC Delivery, Bill Huggins of Huggins and Scott Auctions, and our producer, Tyler Aki. We're joined now by the unbeatable Nancy Huggins and Chicago Journalism Hall of Famer John Bulldog Drummond for this week's episode of Which Ended Higher and another trip in John Bulldog Drummond's time machine. Mr. Drummond, what year are we going to?
We're going back now into the 1970s pretty much primarily, but we'll go back a little earlier than that. We're going to talk about a man named Silas Jane. Now, most people we profile on this show after the match or a game is over, the winner and loser shake hands and it's all over. With Silas, it was a little different. Silas did other things after he lost in a match, so to speak, and would get his own form of retribution. Silas Jane raised horses, not the kind that would race at Arlington, not the kind that would eat at Trotters and Pacers over at Hawthorne or something like that. He raised these horses that are show horses that would compete in the jumpers, that it was big among the clientele he had with people in Oak Brook, Barrington, Inverness, Wayne, Illinois. Those are areas or hotbeds and a very affluent clientele that he would have. That, by the way, is the jumpers, that is an Olympic sport. Thoroughbred racing isn't, but that is an Olympic sport. So he was competing. He said some of his horses would eventually get into the Olympics. But Cy was a hard loser, but he also was a mentor. When he grew up, he took care of his younger brother, George, when he went into the business. Cy had been in many years. George was an up-and-coming youngster. He helped him out as a mentor. But soon, unfortunately for Cy, George began competing against Cy in horse shows around the country and besting Cy's horses. Now, Cy does not appreciate that. There was no shake hands on that. What you do in Cy's word is take care of the guy so he doesn't compete against you again. In this case, he had a Confederate place a bomb in George Jane's Cadillac back in 1965 at his stables in the Palatine. What happened instead of George going out and turning on the ignition, he asked one of his riders, Sherry Rudy, a young woman, to go out and get some sandwiches for him. So when she went to the car and turned on the ignition, she was blown to smithereens. It was a tragic story. But George himself was no easy type of guy to go around. He'd been around, had some rough edges. So he says, well, I'll take care of Cy myself. And he hires a guy to go out and kill Cy at his farm near Elgin. But for some reason, Cy's watching for the guy, comes into the house, and Cy kills him instead. And so the authorities out there said, no, justifiable homicide. Cy was working in self-defense. Now Cy is really angry. Now we've got to take care of this guy. Didn't work on the bombing. Now he tries to kill me. So he hires a guy by the name of Julius Barnes to go out with a .30-06 rifle and shoots George Jane while he's playing cards with his family at an Inverness home, shot him fatally. So George Jane is killed, and Cy gets him out of the way. Only this time, the authorities get a hold of Barnes, who spills the beans, and they arrest Cy. Cy goes to jail. Cy is resourceful. Remember, they're a very resourceful man. He hires the best lawyer money can buy at that time, F. Lee Bailey from Boston, to represent him. So what happens when the jury came in, and by the way, the Tribune polled the jurors afterwards, and they all were scared to death of Cy, would stare at him. So instead of convicting him of murder, they got him off on conspiracy, which Bailey claimed was a great victory. So Cy is now down and doing time and finally in Vienna, Illinois, in the southern part of the state. But he doesn't sit idly by. In that business, you've got to be competitive. And there was a competitor of his by the name of Homer Adcock who was doing very well, a man up in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, about 30 miles west of Milwaukee. He had a big farm and was competing in shows, did before against Cy, and when Cy gets out, I'll have to compete him against again. Let's stop him in his tracks. So he hires a guy who he was a cellmate with at one time by the name of Chuck Johnson to go up there and torch the barn and the horses and Adcock's facility. And what happened was a real tragedy. 33 horses died. The barn was destroyed. But the federales are on this time. They interviewed Johnson, and soon Johnson confessed, after giving him a little edge, that Cy Jane paid him to destroy the Adcock farm. About 2 weeks or 3 weeks before the trial started, maybe it was a month before, I get a call from one of Cy Jane's friends. How would you like to interview Chuck Johnson? You mean the guy that the arsonist who set that Adcock thing on fire? Yeah. So Johnson comes down to the studio. We interview him. And what is Chuck Johnson telling me? No, Cy Jane had nothing to do with that deal. The government pressured me into it. Cy Jane is clean as a hound's tooth on this deal. He didn't have anything to do with it. So the trial begins. Meanwhile, Johnson reneges again. Now he goes back after telling me that he had that Cy had nothing to do with the fire. Tells the government, "Yeah, no, I was the one who did it." So they go on trial, and it looks like curtains for Cy. However, his lawyer, George Howard, a Chicago man, knows about the interview. He subpoenas me, so we have to send the tape down to the trial, which was held in Benton, Illinois, the federal building there, because the plot was supposedly hatched in the prison in southern Illinois. So Johnson gets on the stand and says, "Cy Jane paid me to burn these horses." And Howard puts on the videotape showing me interviewing Johnson, where Johnson denies it and says, "No, no, Cy Jane had nothing to do with it." And Howard points out to the jury, he said, "What are you going to believe? Johnson, who's obviously got a deal from the government, or do you believe the interview he had with Mr. Drummond? And Mr. Drummond didn't pay him anything to do that or said that on his own. What do you think?" Well, what do you think was the jury acquitted Cy, and Cy walks. And that was the last chance for the government to get Cy under the roof, so to speak. Mm. And to this day, of course, some people would say, "Well, I was responsible for Cy getting out. That's why Cy Jane was a free man." However, anybody in the news business who had been contacted to interview a man like Johnson, who was at that time a major factor in the story, would have done the same. Not quite end of the story here. Cy got back, not a young man anymore, in his 80s, close to 80. And he wanted to call me on the phone. He said, "I'm going to try to bring polo to Chicago. It's a rich man's sport. He's going to get the National Guard Armory up on the north side and have polo matches there for people that could afford to see it and get more younger people involved in it." But he died before that could catch on. Not quite the end. The last part of the story is Hollywood's not so dumb on this. Somebody submitted a script to Hollywood to have this Cy Jane movie that was a Cain and Abel rivalry. Jack Palance had already been slated to be Cy, and Kirk Douglas was taking the role of George. But financing went down the drain and never came about. And although recently a guy called me, there's another script coming out, so it may not be last. The Cy Jane story might someday make the silver screen. And we're telling a little about Cy Jane today. One of the remarkable men I ever met, one of the most ruthless individuals. But as I said, different than the type of sports people we had. When he lost, he would take direct action. Remember that. Just like Cy, if you're under contract with Tom Morgan, for example, say I was working for Tom, I was Cy, and Tom says, "You bum, get off here. I don't want you around that show anymore. You're stinking up the joint." What would I do? Would I get a lawyer to litigate it? No. Cy would have that story of yours burned to the ground. That's the difference. Tough customer, but he was. Tough customer.
Oh, that's a good one. That sounds like it'd be a good movie, actually.
Oh, it'd be a great film. Yeah. If it's done right, it would be fantastic.
Yeah. Actually, I have a question. John, is there a role for you in that movie? Is there going to be a part?
He's a patsy. I guess John I would be Drummond? The guy that got Cy Jane out of jail. That's probably true. That would be it.
And who do you want to play you?
That would be a good. Oh, I'd like to have some He-Man guy do it, but they'd probably get some wimp to do it. I'm sure of that.
You know who would be a good guy to play John Drummond?
Al Pacino, I think.
Well, I'm thinking.
Al would be great.
Here's a hint. We think he was in T Crown.
Oh, really? Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe. I think he'd be Russell Crowe. Sure. He'd be perfect for John Drummond.
Russell Crowe could do it. Yeah, that would be great.
Let's get this going. Let's get this movie going. But first, we've got to get this week's edition of Which End Did Higher going. Okay, now we remember we've got a 1953 theme to this Which End Did Higher. First item. Mickey Mantle, 1953 Bowman Color Card number 59, PSA 6. Next item, Yogi Berra, 1953 Topps Card number 104, PSA 8. Next item, Jackie Robinson, 1953 Topps Card number 1, PSA 4.5. Next item, Mickey Mantle, 1953, Topps card, number 82, SGC 3. So the first one was a Mantle Bowman color in a PSA 6. This is a Mantle 53 Topps in an SGC 3. And the last one, just to change it up a little, 1953 Playboy magazine issue number 1 with Marilyn Monroe on the cover. Plus in that lot, there were two 1950s People magazines that had Marilyn Monroe on the cover. So this is a tough one. Now, we've got all three men with 7, not 6. Everybody's got 7, and Nancy has 10. So Let's let John Drummond go first this time.
You're dirty red. What was the year of that Yogi Berra? Yoga Berra, and what was the date of that?
That was a 53 Topps card number 104 PSA 8.
So he'd already been in the business for a while, and
yes.
The first Mantle card you mentioned, it was not dated. What was that first thing you had on Mantle?
That was a 53 Bowman Color PSA 6, and the other Mantle was a 53 Topps SGC 3.
It was close to his rookie year. Oh, you got me in a real barrel, but I got to be a He-Man here, and I'm going to go with the Playboy magazine. They always had Ensign Mount.
Okay, it's like, which card is he going to go with? And he ends up with the Marilyn Monroe Playboy magazine. Okay, let's go next. Let's let Tyler pick. Tyler.
I will go with the Jackie Robinson card.
Tyler is going with the Jackie Robinson 53 Topps PSA 4.5. Vince.
I am going to join Tyler on the Jackie Robinson number one card.
Okay, Vince is going in on the Jackie Robinson bandwagon, and Nancy Huggins.
Okay, so I think I'm going to go with the Mantle, the 53 Bowman Color Mantle.
Nancy Huggins is going with the Mickey Mantle 1953 Bowman Color PSA 6. Okay, gentlemen, another not-so-good week for the men. Okay, the lowest price item, John Drummond's Playboy magazine with Marilyn Monroe.
That. I can't believe that. That's happening to America.
Now, it went for $1,700, so not bad, but not as good as some of the cards. Next lowest item, Mickey Mantle 1953 Topps card, number 82, SGC 3. That went for $2,400. Next item, the Yogi Berra 1953 Topps number 104 PSA 8 went for $2,700. Second item, the Jackie Robinson 1953 Topps PSA 4.5. Nancy's chuckling because she knows what that leaves for the first item is her pick.
Okay,
Nancy's at 11. John and Tyler are still tied with 7. Vince, who can't handle the extra free point, goes back to 6.
It's over.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, so now next week it's a clear battle for second place, all right?
Yes.
That's what it's going to be. Now, here's a couple. I was going to do this as a bonus point, but here's a couple things to tie in. Here, for 1953, here's a couple of leaders. Who led the major leagues in batting average? Can anybody say who it was? It's not a Hall 50s. Of Famer, but a well-known name. That's
in 53?
Hint. Yes.
That was Mickey Vernon, was it?
No, Mickey Vernon had a good year that year, but not Mickey Vernon. He actually was like third, so that's a good guess. He was tied with Musial. First was, I would have never gotten this, Carl Furillo hit 344.
Oh, no,
I guess he had a great arm in the outfield.
I never knew he was a hitter.
Yeah. Okay, who led the majors in home runs in 1953? Here's a hint. He was on the cover of a Sports Illustrated that I have a signed version of it.
Ralph Kiner?
No.
The Milwaukee Braves guy.
Yes.
Eddie Matthews.
John Drummond's right on that one.
We each get a half a point there.
Yeah, that's okay.
I think I can get.
Okay, we'll give
well,
each a half point.
You guys are really digging real hard.
Now, one We're more. Trying, We've man. Got time for one more here. Who led the major leagues in RBIs in 1953? I never would have guessed this one ever.
Ooh, major leagues.
Yeah. Second was Roy Campanella. Third was Eddie Matthews. Fourth was Duke Snider, who actually had a really good year. He was fifth in batting average.
This was 54?
1953.
53. It wouldn't have been Heron then, no. 53.
No, no. Okay, you guys are stumped. It's Al Rosen.
Oh,
he had 145 RBIs. I would have never guessed that. By the way, Robin Roberts, to show how pitching has changed, Robin Roberts in 1953 had 33 complete games, 23 wins, and he led the major leagues with 346 innings pitched.
Wow.
Now, that's if amazing. It's like they get 200 innings, they're workhorses.
Yeah,
it's
right,
really
right,
something.
Exactly. It's crazy.
Who you got 200 innings this year? I bet nobody, did they?
I think there were some. I bet Scherzer might have. Scherzer's the closest thing to one of the old-time workhorses, probably. But Spahn and Roberts both had 23 wins. You're not going to see a lot of 20-game winners anymore. I don't think we might never see a 300-game winner. They got to change. You know what I think they need to do is lessen the amount of pitchers on a roster so they don't make six pitching changes every game.
Yeah,
but that's never going
to
happen.
The games wouldn't be so slow either.
Yeah, these four-hour games, it's like, come on, boys, move it along.
The two Sox games here were both, the last two Sox games were over 4 hours.
They were, yeah. That's crazy. That's too long.
That's a fact. Jeez,
yeah, it's true. All right, well, it's time for another short break. Thanks, Nancy, and thanks, Mr. Drummond. We've got one more episode next week, and I've got a Pro Set Metal football, another box to open and split that we'll do. You get to pick. Now, Bill Huggins said he got a good autograph card, that like a $75 card out of the last week with the first pick. So hopefully somebody gets a Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence autograph out of this box. Real nice looking card. So that's how we'll give out the prizes. Everybody, you'll all get something, whether you're happy with it's like a Christmas present. It might be a pair of dirty socks, but you're gonna get something. All right, hang in there. We'll be right back.
Now back to Sports Collecting with Tom Morgan. Sponsored by ERCDelivery.com and Huggins and Scott Auctions on ESPN 1000 and ESPNChicago.com.
Welcome back. I'm Tom Morgan with Vince Clementi of ERC Delivery, Bill Huggins of Huggins and Scott Auctions, and our producer, Tyler Aki. We're on till 8. If you have an item, we only have one show left this year after this week. Next week is our last show. So if you have something you want to call us about, 312-332-3776. Call in quick. We'll try to get you in this week. It could be something that you want to know the value, or you just want to tell something you have. You want to say something about the show, whatever. Give us a call if you like to give us a call about anything. So a lady stopped by and showed me a picture she had on her phone. It was a PSA 9 1994 Topps Finest refractor of Michael Jordan. And I was like, wow, that's nice. Did you get that graded yourself? And she's like, well, this isn't mine, but I have one like this. I go, oh, so yours is a 9? No, but I've got one like this. So now if you have one that's nice enough that you think you have a chance at a 9, then get it graded. It looks like 9s go for about $1,000. And if you do get a 10, those are in the $4,000 to $5,000 range. So I would say if it really looks perfect to you, I just never know. That had the film on it. I sent in a couple of cards to CSG that had the film, and it seemed like they really graded down on the surface because of the film. So
right.
I don't know about that. You know what I mean? How are they going to grade it? Bill Huggins, have you guys sent in much to PSA, for instance, that were those type cards from the 90s that were refractors or whatever and had the film on it that you can think of how you did with them?
Gosh, you know, I don't remember if we sent in a lot that do have that covering on it, that film coating, but
So that's always a question. I don't know how they're going to grade that with that on it. And if you take the
film
off.
Although if you peel that off and don't touch it, gosh, that's going to be an amazing front.
Clean as can be. I think if I had it to do over on mine, I'd probably take them out, pull the film off, and have them graded again and see what type of grade they get without it. But mine wasn't a refractor. It was the Jordan regular card.
And any card I ever had that had film on it, well, that was the next thing I took off. I just would peel it off.
Typically I would do it too, unless it just looked clean, like the way it was, I might leave it then. That's why I was kind of, I think I got like a 7.5 where it was like 9.5, 9.5, 9.5, 7 or something for the surface. I was like, then I was like, oh, I don't know. And I would imagine on those, probably each grading company would do it a little different. So, but I wasn't going to spend $150 for PSA to grade that card.
Yeah, right, right.
Because it wasn't a refractor. They're not valuable enough. It's a card you want to keep and maybe get it graded. That's another story, I guess.
Vince, I guess you always open those. There's some cards in the newer shiny card stuff that if you open a pack, you get something that's sort of a gamble. Should I open this little tall something?
Like those rip cards. You would always rip cards.
That's exactly what I'm thinking of. Rip.
Guys, it's all instinct, you know. I just, do what feels right, you know, and I rip.
You'd be like, so rip. Vince, are you going to rip that as you hear?
You know? Exactly. Yeah,
okay, I guess he is. Now, another collector stopped by with a, speaking of nice cards, he had, I think he had a cheaper Brady card, a cheaper Brett Favre rookie card, but he had the third thing he showed me was a Drew Brees Bowman Chrome rookie refractor numbered to 1999. Now those, a PSA 10 sells in the 8,000 range. I looked at his card. Usually you're going to see under 10 time magnification, you're going to see some, a little chipping on the corners or edges. There was nothing.
Really?
So to me, I would have sent that in. I told him, if it's mine, I'm sending that to PSA and see what you get. Because even if it gets a 9, or it's still going to be worth it to get done. But for the chance at a 10, I mean, on a card like that, you really, to me, you need to send that one in. Another listener called. He heard us talking a couple weeks ago about wrestling memorabilia. And now, Bill, he has a collection of signed items and other items from the Dick the Bruiser era. Now, do you think he said he has some really neat stuff from that era. Do you think a collection
what era
like
is that?
That was like he was in the, I think, 50s and 60s, Dick the Bruiser.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't that big into wrestling, but I think that's when he was throwing people around the ring. So I don't know. What would you think? Have you guys run much from that era, Bill?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, you say it was autographed stuff, or
some of it was autographed. Some of it, maybe he had some, you know, like shorts or something. I don't know. He said he had a bunch of different stuff that he's been collecting it from that group of guys.
I mean, if it's match worn items or autographs, I mean, most of those guys are probably not around anymore. And I would certainly want to investigate, you know, whether we have the right audience for that or not.
Yeah, I would think it might be pretty good. That reminds me, I'll have to ask him next week. I was going to ask John Drummond, did he ever end up going in the ring? Because he was into the right. Couldn't you see him, the Bulldog, in there on a celebrity thing in a wrestling match? We'll have to see him put that into his
question. I put my money on John every time.
Don't you think that Russell Crowe would be the perfect guy to play him in that movie?
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, you know, I'm going to be semi-retired. Maybe I can get a script together.
Sure.
Say, hey, Mr. Crow, do you remember me when you stopped in my store? He's like, what store are you talking about, sir?
Naperville, Illinois.
Yeah, I could have sworn it was you. Oh, well. Just another one of those things, a goofy idea that will never happen. But
you never
it's
know,
an
though.
Idea.
You never know. Yep.
Hey, Sam Smith stopped in yesterday into T-Crown, and I said, so what'd you think about the NBA Top 75 list? And he goes, he was one of the guys who was on the panel that made picks for it.
Awesome.
So it's like, yeah, I thought it was very well done. I mean, there's guys you could say that were in there, guys like could have been in there, like Vince Carter for sure could have been in there. Walt Bellamy, the old center, could have for sure been in there. But then who do you take out that's already on that list? And Dominique finally made it. He didn't make it the first time. I always compared Vince Carter to Dominique. So I'll bet you the next time Vince Carter will be in it
there you
at
go.
The 100-year thing when they they'll probably do it again. I think that's a good idea. And I've been collecting those autographs. Well, we're already at
awesome.
The... So I think I'm only missing 7 out of the 75. So
you're
good.
Almost there.
Yeah, we're at the end of another show. Final show of the year is next week, so get your questions worked out. Okay, don't forget now, go to HugginsAndScott.com. They're adding things every day on for their November auction. Bidding begins in about a month, November 26th on that auction. Vince Clementi at ERC Delivery. Things staying busy?
Yeah, always 24/7. Keep it busy for sure.
Very good. And I'll be at Triple Crown in Naperville for 3 more weeks. It looks like my last day will be November 16th. So if you want to stop by, things are getting cleared out pretty good. But I'm still getting some of the products from the card companies for the next couple of weeks. Not all of them, but some of them. So keep in touch that way. And I will still have, after I close, I'll still have tcrowntom@gmail.com, my tcrowntom.com, and my Twitter ID, tcrowntom. So, and I will still do a business. So thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.